Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, along with the Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. And tough one on Sunday against the Rams. Darren Rizzi doesn't get that third straight win. But we talk all the time about putting the team in position for a chance for victory, right? And that's exactly what this team did. You know, you want to finish it and get that victory. But that's what Coach Rizzi had talked about at least the first couple of days is – you put the team in position to win. You've got to figure out a way to finish it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, that game was a bit of a tale of two halves. The first half really was a fantastic job by our defense. We moved the ball offensively. At the end of the day, I thought it was a pretty well-played game. There weren't any turnovers, as I recall. There was not a lot of penalties. At the end of the day, though, they were 3-for-3 in the red zone, and we were 0-for-2, and that's what it came down to. That situation, situational football in the red zone, and not being able to, finish in that area. But there was a couple tough calls that, in a low penalty game, when you don't get a call on a big play, or you get a call against you on a big play that you think is marginal, those are tough to take. Always seems like it happens against the Rams.
That's true. Believe me, without having you say it, I will say it. It was interference on Juwan Johnson, and we'll move on. especially in the two, there were only four penalties. Yeah, but the two penalties on that drive that negated a touchdown. This, instead of being 10-0, it's 3-0, and so I mean, yeah. It's there. They're so doesn't. Sometimes it's not the number; it's the impact, right?
Yeah, and look, we can debate whether they were penalties or not. I certainly would, but look, it is what it is. And look, we still had an opportunity to win the game at the end, get in position to tie it up, and then maybe go for two or take it to overtime, and we couldn't close that out. It was a good job by their defense, but there were some encouraging things as well. So. You come out of a game like that and it's disappointing to lose. But I always try to look at what are the positives that came out of it.
I'm curious. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just curious because Coach Rizzi said after the game, and we talked on the coach's show last night, that he would have gone for two. And I was just curious, is that a conversation that you would have ever had with him? Not kind of generically, hey, because every game's different. And because they had played so well in the second half, that would have may have dictated whether you go for two or not. But is that a conversation that a GM would have with a coach? Or, hey, what's your philosophy? Do you take the tie at home, on the road, go for two? Have you talked about that?
Well, we haven't talked about that specifically. We do talk about during the week about, how aggressive we're going to be, in particular situations. That circumstance is really dictated by the flow of the game. How good your defense is playing. Do you have a play that you love, from the 2-point line? So there's a lot of things that go into that. I'm always in favor of going out and being aggressive to win a game. As opposed to, sitting back and waiting for the other team to make a mistake. So I certainly would have supported that had we been able to score and go for the win.
You talked earlier that, it was kind of a strange game. Not a lot of penalties and no turnovers. And that's kind of where I'm looking at from a turnover standpoint for your defense. First six games, you were able to produce 14 turnovers. Last six games, only three, and I get that, they come in bunches, but it's, the inability to kind of keep that, I don't know if you can keep up 14 and six, but that, I guess, how big of a factor is that defensively you've not been able to really get that kind of game-changing turnover?
Yeah, look, that's you're right. You know, those turnovers are game-changing events, takeaways, I should say, as opposed to turnovers. Part of that is look, you know, we're down two of our better corners that were good at taking the ball away, and you know, we've had some other injuries and guys haven't been able to play. So some of it's that, and some of it's just opportunity, and some of it's that, you know, that we're playing teams that are good at protecting the football. And so, you know, it's a combination of those variables. And you're right, they do seem to come in bunches. You know, you might have a game where you have 0-0, 0, and then all of a sudden you get 4 in a single game. So they'll come.
The situation, at least from Coach Riz, sounds at least positive. Well, no, everybody along the line, you know, certainly, but from getting Eric McCoy and probably Lucas Patrick back, you know, this week would be hugely significant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eric's one of the best centers in the league. He's one of the leaders of our offensive line and our offense in general. And he, you know, he's a difference maker, no question. And I thought, you know, Shane Lemieux did a good job in this game playing for him. Lucas Patrick's been a good player for us this year, and you know, we've missed him when he hasn't been able to play. So it'll be good to get those guys back. I'm not sure that offsets the disappointment in losing Taysom Hill. That's a devastating injury both for him and for us, and really disappointed about that. But it will be good to have Eric and Lucas back on the field.
So yeah, that's a tough one, right? I mean, the Taysom situation, and you could kind of see, you know, as he was leaving the field, we didn't know with the injury at that time, but, you know, certainly the reaction from the crowd, just what he has meant. And unfortunately with Taysom, right, the next man up is tough because he does so much. It's like next three men up. But to kind of talk a little bit more about what he's meant to this team and what he, and really how he changes the game when he's on the field.
Yeah, look, there is no next man up for Taysom because you're right that no one else fills all those roles like he does. But I think just as important is he's just got a love for the game and a love for playing that you feel, you know, when you're watching play and certainly when the guys play with him or against him. You know, I thought it was really telling how many Rams players paid the respects to him, and he's just one of these guys that is he's a throwback football player, and regardless of whatever position you want to identify him as, and man, that's well respected around our league. He's well respected and obviously loved in you know, in the Saints community, loved by us upstairs. He just, for everything that he brings, and yeah, so that's what's disappointing. I'm disappointed for him and his family in this injury, and yet, look, he'll bounce back from it.
We'll have more with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis as the Saints head to East Rutherford, New Jersey for the Giants on Sunday. I want to talk a little bit more about your wide receiver core, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He had one catch in his first week, which was week 9, for 5 yards. But in his last three, he's had 7 receptions, 4 touchdowns, 40 yards, 67 yards, 71 yards, and 28 yards. That's outstanding. That's a percentage. I mean, that's just been, he has just been a great find, and it came at a good time.
Yeah, look, sounds like we need to throw him the ball more. We're going to get that percentage of production. No, he's been fantastic to come in, you know, mid-year, you know, jump into our offense right away and make an impact. It's impressive, and he's been a joy to have around, a joy to have around the team. And look, it's fun to see a guy that come in and have some success, and hopefully that can continue, and I think it will continue.
We are going to talk later in the show with Jeff Ireland's going to join us. And also we're talking to Daryl Moose Johnston with Fox, who's doing the game this week, but he's also part of the UFL executive vice president. And we're going to talk to him just about Kevin Austin. But and I'm curious as to, certainly Kevin was with the team in camp. He's been with you for a while, but the relationship from the NFL standpoint with the UFL and how it's either grown or gotten stronger from in the USFL days, which wasn't long ago, but just how that relationship is now.
Yeah, look, I think it's a good relationship. And look, we're watching closely those rosters and how they play and see how guys develop. And, you know, we've got Randy Mueller in our building right now, and he was part of that league. So he knows a lot of those players. There's talent there, and there's guys that maybe didn't get the right opportunity. They weren't in the right place. Maybe they hadn't developed enough that are getting a chance to play and be seen. And you know, Kevin's certainly one of those guys. There's a number of other ones, including some successful kickers in our league that just needed opportunity to show what they could do and get another crack at the NFL.
And Dante Pettis, you know, here's a guy, you know, on your practice squad and the way Coach Rizzi kind of looked at it, it was like every week was kind of this open scenario, so to speak. But wow, what an impressive aspect he has been. And it's not surprising. I mean, he leads the NCAA with 9 punt return touchdowns. But talk about him as well.
Yeah, look, he had a nice punt return for us a couple weeks ago, and he had a big 2-point conversion in this last game. He's come in, done a good job. He's a smart player, veteran, and you feel some of that veteran presence with him. And look, just goes about his business like a good pro. And look, we've been unfortunate that we've had the injuries we've had in the wide receiver room, but fortunate that we've been able to, you know, find a few guys that can come in and contribute. And that's a credit to, you know, it's a credit to our scouting staff and the guys that are coming up with these players and these names and giving them an opportunity. A credit to our coaches for getting them prepared in a, you know, short amount of time to come in and contribute.
And kudos to your staff as well, because you're able to utilize them from practice squad, 3 straight elevations, which is the max. So, I mean, you literally had 2, Mason Tipton was inactive. You had 2 wide receivers and then brought up Dante and Kevin. So without getting too deep into it, but get as deep as you want, you're going to have to make some decisions, some roster decisions this week.
Yeah. Look, I think that, first of all, I think that when we expanded the practice squad to 16 players and we gave, you know, the opportunity for veteran players to be on the practice squad and we have the opportunity to do these elevations, you know, maximum of 3, those are really good roster management tools that we have as a league. I think it benefits the players. It benefits certainly the teams and the product on the field. And so, you know, it's and look, every team utilizes these opportunities to manage their roster because, you know, every week you have these short-term injuries that may be a week or 2 weeks or even 3 weeks, and it gives you an opportunity, you know, to manage the roster and what's playing on game day and put out a better product than you would otherwise.
And you are able to protect 4 each week from being poached by other teams. And I'm just curious, you don't have to, I mean, does that 4, if we'd have looked at it week by week by week through the first, you know, 13
weeks. I don't think we're doing that anymore. That was a rule in the past. Yeah. We're not doing those protections.
Oh.
And the protections that existed even then were pretty limited. So look, any player can be poached off of a roster.
And they got to go right to the active roster of the new team.
Yeah, if somebody wants to sign them, they can sign them. That's happened a number of times in our league already. I think Detroit last week signed 2 or 3 guys from other teams' practice squads and put them on their active roster. And look, it's another way that we can, you know, if you have a lot of injuries and one team has a lot of injuries, particularly at one position, you have an opportunity to dive into that pool and get players that have been at least practicing and in a system and are more game ready. And they, look, it's a good thing for our league.
The Saints go back on the road for the first time since November 3rd, East Rutherford against the Giants. We'll talk about Week 14 next here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. The Giants, I mean, there's a team that can empathize. You've been through it. They're in a seven-game losing streak. The difference is they are completely out of the whole playoff situation. Brian Daboll, you know, they're kind of even, as of late today, had not decided even who their quarterback was going to be on Sunday. So, but sometimes these teams can get dangerous, right? I mean, they are like a, you know, cat backed up into a corner. They got really nothing to lose. And that, you know, you got a wide out like Malik Nabers, whoever's at quarterback. I mean, these kind of teams can sometimes be dangerous.
Well, look, I think every team is dangerous in the NFL because every team has talent. Every, you know, the whoever has the worst record in the league can beat the team with the best record. It's been done before. And I don't think we're a sport that lends itself to lack of effort. I think, you know, very few times do I see teams that display a lack of effort. Everybody's competitive. Everybody wants to win every game, regardless of what your circumstances are. And everybody has something to play for. And so we're gonna face a team that's desperate for a win. And oftentimes in our league, the most desperate team wins. And so we have to come there and be desperate and put our best foot forward in order to win a game.
Is it easy to put the blinders on, right? That's like you have to, because what's happening elsewhere with Atlanta and Tampa and all the other teams, you can go nuts down that rabbit hole, but because it doesn't matter unless you win, right? So is it, yeah. Do you just, you know, I mean, you knew Atlanta had lost to the Chargers on Sunday prior to your game, yep. Right? You knew that would have been a significant victory. But other than that, you just got to put the blinders on, right? Because the NFC South right now, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, look, I don't know that it's easy to put blinders on because, look, it's human nature to pay attention to what's going on around you. But we can't, you know, listen, I think every team's this way. You can't afford to look ahead. You can only afford to look at what's right in front of you and focus on that. Otherwise, you're going to get bit. And that's all we can do. That's what we will do. I think our players, I think football players in general have a great capacity to look at what's right in front of them and focus on that. I know the good ones do. And I think most of the players in the National Football League are pretty damn good players. So, that's what we'll do, and that's what the Giants are going to do as well. They're not going to worry about 2 weeks from now or at the end of the season. They're going to worry about what's right in front of them right now, and that's going to be the New Orleans Saints for them, and for us, it's the New York Giants.
And it feels like my final question will be just kind of that Rizzi feels that. It's like to him, and he's talked about, look, every game we are playing, every game like a playoff game until somebody tells me, We're out of it, right? I mean, until that time, it's full steam ahead, as if, you know, as if your record's different.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that Rizzi's done really well is develop a focus on what's right in front of us, just like I mentioned. And he's been able to verbalize that in a good way. He's been able to adjust and tweak the things that we're doing to keep that focus finely tuned, and I expect that to continue.
Well, best of luck up in East Rutherford, New Jersey, against the Giants. Then, of course, back home with Washington and in Green Bay on November 23rd. We'll talk about that when the time comes, but continued success, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back, we'll bring in Jeff Ireland, Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel. And we'll also talk with former Dallas Cowboys running back and now Fox analyst Daryl Moose Johnston. This is the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Jeff Ireland, Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel, joining us, as well as Daryl Moose Johnston, Fox, his 23rd year of Fox, Kevin Kugler, Laura Okram also doing the game with the Giants and the Saints on Sunday, East Rutherford, New Jersey. Your thoughts on kind of the Saints with the coaching change? Coach Rizzi comes in, you know, chance to beat the Rams on Sunday. That would have made, you know, would have been three straight. Just overall, your kind of 30,000-foot view as you look at this team moving forward.
We knew that the coaching change was going to have a positive impact for the Saints. But to be able to follow that up again, you know, the second week and then really against the Rams, almost be able to go 3-0, like you said. And I love, you know, the conversation about what Coach Rizzi was going to do on that drive. If they score, we're going for two in the win. And that's just, you know, some of those decisions that you make as a coach, and you have those conversations with your team and your players, that's very, very beneficial, you know, in what they're doing. You know, there's a couple of years ago, I think Brian Daboll's first game in Tennessee did the same thing. Opening weekend, hey, we're going to go down here. We're going to score. We're going to go for two and we're going to win the game. And they pull that off. So when the coach shows a lot of faith, in the team to be able to do those types of things, it really helps that growth and that chemistry and camaraderie within the locker room.
Great answer, Moose. So, Jeff Ireland here, Moose. So you have a bit of a unique connection to the Saints that, you know, you were obviously one of the greatest players to ever play at Syracuse, but there's another great player, was a teammate of yours back in the 80s named Terry Wooden. Terry is one of our national scouts with us. And can you talk a little bit about Terry as a player back in the Syracuse days?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it was beneficial in another way too. He made his little brother JoJo come and join us too. So we had two Woodens there who are now both working in personnel in the NFL. So, you know, Terry was a huge part of our defense through the run that we had at Syracuse. The end of my time there, junior year, we went 11-0-1, actually played in the Sugar Bowl that year against Auburn. That was our one tie. Auburn kicked a field goal with 4 seconds left to tie at 16-16. And then the following year, we went 10-2 and beat LSU in the Hall of Fame game in Tampa. And then Terry was there another year after I had graduated. So, you know, he was a part of that group of guys that went on a really, really good run at Syracuse, and then kind of paved the way for the Dwight Freeneys and the Marvin Harrisons and the Rob Conrads and the Donovan McNabbs, you know, that group of guys that came in after us and were just unbelievably talented. So, you know, Terry was, you know, happened to go against him in training camp, you know, for 3 years. You know, he was one of those unique guys that was strong, but very athletic. So you couldn't come out at him 100 miles an hour expecting a big collision because he was too athletic and he was really, really quick with his movements. So, you know, he was always tough to block. And it was always funny because we had two really, really good outside linebackers at the time. It was Terry Wooden and Keith Freiberg. And then when you graduate and you meet some of the guys on the teams that you played against and the way that they talk about, you know, both of those guys, you know, hey, everybody talked about your defensive line at Syracuse, but boy, your outside linebackers, you know, were the guys that really gave us fits. So, yeah, Terry was an awesome football player, but, you know, more importantly than that, and I think this is why we had such great teams at Syracuse, is he was a great man and a great teammate. So we had some really, really talented guys that grew into becoming really good football players. Through Mike Wojcik and our strength and conditioning program, but we also had high character guys as well.
No doubt. Yeah, well, I've got the benefit of being in the same draft room with Terry for 10 years, and it's one thing that it's a ritual for me is, you know, we talk about prototype size players all the time, and every single morning, the day we start linebackers, I said, Terry, stand up, because this is what a prototype linebacker is supposed to look like, and he still looks like a prototype linebacker.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just a handful. I mean, he's one of those unique guys. You know, a guy that I got to the NFL level with and that I would compare Terry to from time to time is Seth Joyner. You know, very, very stout at the point of contact, but just so athletic that if you were trying to bring a little bit too much, they could make you look real silly, out there with just that quick little move that they had.
Yeah, no doubt. Can I transition to another question? Just as it relates to our own roster.
Lamoussi, you're the vice president of football operations at the UFL, and we've had a young player named Kevin Austin, Jr., make our team and had pretty good production with us in the last couple of weeks. Have you met Kevin? Do you know Kevin?
I haven't met him, but I have watched him on film and have been impressed. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Very unique body type at the position on the outside.
What can you tell us about the UFL and the opportunities these guys get? And, we're constantly looking and grading that tape and, where's the UFL going and what kind of status are we in right now? And this is kind of the off season for the UFL, but there's guys like Kevin everywhere. And we just got to give them more of a shot, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as good as the personnel departments are around the NFL now and the amount of data that's out there, you can still find those diamonds in the rough. And that's one of the things that we take a lot of pride in. And actually, I'm at a facility right now where we are looking to bring all of our eight teams in together and be able to put them, in very equitable facilities, kind of in the center of the Arlington area. So we're actually walking spaces right now, to be able to upgrade, the day-to-day routine for the players. And that's one of the things that everybody in our league has tried to do, since day one. We've got guys that have a number of years in the NFL at different positions, that are a part of the UFL family. And one of the things that we are all in line with is making sure our day-to-day for our players is as professional an environment as we can create. So this is going to be a huge step up for us for our guys next year. And that should pay dividends just with, the ability for them, with meeting room spaces, film study, game install, our practice facilities with the local high schools here in the DFW area is outstanding just because of how football is just king here. But the one area that we really felt we could upgrade was just where our guys are for the majority of the time during the course of that workday. And this is going to really, really set us apart. It's something very, very unique, to either iteration of legacy XFL or legacy USFL. So it's going to be great. And really, what we try to accomplish with our guys is not get them back to the NFL. Our guys have been there. It's this time we want to make sure that they're fully prepared when they get back to the NFL to maximize that opportunity. A lot of them, almost, 80-85% of them have had an opportunity, whether it's a rookie mini camp, it's an OTA, it's a training camp opportunity. They've actually been on the 53, been on the practice squad. We've got a number of different guys in our league that have had that opportunity, but they've come back to us. And our mission has always been, make sure we hire great coaches who have, an expansive network to hire great staffs and help these guys get back to the NFL. And whatever the reason was they didn't stay last time, we've given them the tools to help fix that and make sure that the next opportunity they get in the NFL, they find a way to maximize that and they get a 2-year career, a 3-year career, a 4-year career, because that's life changing when you talk about the finances, even for those young guys that are coming in on a 1-year deal.
Moose, my last question, we'll let you go. I know you got things going on, but, Fox with the Super Bowl and, the crystal ball that you kind of look at, Kansas City trying to win 3 straight. Well, you guys won with Dallas in 92, 93, 95. You lose in the conference championship or what would have been 4 straight. I guess, people probably do not appreciate how difficult that is and what Kansas City's doing. And the AFC feels a little more set, so to speak, but the NFC's a, is a jump ball at this point. I guess just the what Kansas City is doing and what you guys did in the mid 90s, you can't appreciate enough.
No, we were the first team to do 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. New England did it a few years later. For us, that third one in a row, we had a massive change. That's when Jimmy Johnson stepped away. So just imagine the Kansas City Chiefs trying to accomplish that without Andy Reid. It was really, really difficult. On top of that, we lost Eric Williams, midpoint of the season. And Eric was our, he was the nasty on our team. He was the physicality on our offense. And without him at right tackle, we were we were a different team. So we had a couple of major things that really hurt us. But I've always been proud of that team because we fell behind 21-0 very quickly in that game. And we got close to getting it inside 10 points on a few occasions. And I think if we would have pulled that off, we might have had a huge comeback, even with all the adversity we'd faced that year. And that's what I think is special about what Kansas City is doing right now. The amount of change that they've had and, you know, with players coming in and out and you lose a lot of your key people and your support staff for opportunities around the NFL, and they just keep coming back. And that's the consistency of Andy Reid at the top and Spags and on the defensive side of the ball and Patrick and Travis and Chris Jones. You know, the leadership is there, and you see that in the way that they play the game every Sunday. They find a way to win, and it's such a unique skill that happens over time with chemistry and camaraderie, is finding a way to win a game you probably shouldn't have won. And how many times have we seen the Chiefs do that this season? So I do think they're going to be a tough out. I think this could be Buffalo's year. They look like a different team. I know they've lost a lot of key guys from last year's team to this year's team, but it seems like for some reason it's gelled really well. So I think that is going to be probably the matchup that we'll see in the AFC Championship game. And if there's a way for it to get back to Highmark Stadium in Buffalo and Orchard Park, you know, that'll be a big challenge for Kansas City.
Well, we appreciate your time, at least for me. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be seeing you, you know, down the road, certainly MetLife and Caesars Superdome down the road as well. Thank you very much.
That sounds good. Good to visit with you. Good talking to you, Jeff.
All right, man. Take care of yourself. See you Sunday.
The Gulf South will be the place to be in late January and February of the Senior Bowl and then the Super Bowl. Jeff and I will bring in the Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director, Jim Nagy, next here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, along with Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, as well as Jeff Ireland, Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager, College Personnel. And I will use my James Madison communications degree wisely here, and I will ask a question or two, and then I will get the heck out of the way, because I am curious to get this opportunity to listen to Jeff and Jim. And so as we were talking off in the break, Jim, that your conversations with Jeff, and I assume all of these college personnel guys, are ongoing. They're not, it doesn't just start, they're ongoing.
Yeah, Mike, they are. It's good to see Jeff on this Zoom. That was the goal, Mike, when I took the job 7 years ago, was really try to make it more of a formal relationship with the NFL teams. My predecessor, Phil Savage, who's a good friend and known Phil a long time, he would have a lot of like one-off phone calls with buddies and whatnot. I really want to make it more of a formal process. Sure, I still talk to my friends, you know, on one-off conversations and family conversations, but in terms of like putting this roster together every year, I try to get about half the league on these calls where we kind of share grades and share notes on players. And, you know, we've got our own staff. That was another part of the build here, was building out a football operation. But like I say all the time, this game is for them. It's not for us. We're not playing football in Mobile after February 1st. So the goal is to bring all the guys that they want to see. And so making the teams a formal part of our process was important.
So Jim, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and we talk 2, 3, 4 times a year. You've come to training camp, you've come to mini camp and all these things. But what would you say is the biggest change in the landscape of All-Star games now versus even 5 or 6 years ago? What would you say the biggest change is?
Yeah, that's a great question. This thing has changed a ton in the 7 years I've been doing it. You know, I would say the biggest thing right now, because it's at the front of my mind, I'm in the middle of it, is having the juniors available and trying to navigate that. Now, it's a good problem. I'm not bellyaching about it. Our rosters should be and will be our best rosters we've ever had this year, but just trying to navigate which juniors are coming out and which ones, you know, if they're coming out, do they want to play in the game? So trying to connect with agents and having those relationships right now is really the biggest thing. And, you know, that would be the biggest thing. And then the other challenge, you know, the other challenge right now that Jeff, you and I have spoken about, is the roster attrition on game day. It's a major issue. You know, we last year we're coming off our best year. We had 10 first round picks. They were all seniors. That's why I feel like this year's roster will be better. I think we'll have more buy-in from the junior class, which will be a good thing. But I think, like a lot of things right now, there's not a lot of loyalty in the sport of football right now. We're seeing it at the college level with portal and NIL and coaching moves and everything. There's just not a lot of people, I guess the lack of loyalty is the biggest thing. So I think a lot of a plan for a lot of these players with the representation is to come to Mobile, have a couple good days of practice, blow up on social media, have a big couple viral moments on Twitter, and then get out of Dodge before you get hurt. So our biggest challenge moving forward is just trying to continue to convince these players that the game is important. I think the false narrative out there is that they see, guys like Jeff Ireland and the Saints staff depart on Thursday after practice, and that they don't think that what they don't understand is they're going back to New Orleans and wearing that Senior Bowl game tape out probably more than any game tape that's out there. So that's my job, is to message that to these kids and these agents that how important the game is, and again, there's been a lot of players over the years that have helped themselves on Saturday for sure. So there's been a lot to get back long-windedly to get back to your question. There's been a lot of things we've had to navigate, but just NIL portal, just the changing culture of where we're at in football right now has impacted us.
It was not a short-winded answer, that's for sure, Jim, and I didn't expect it to be, because there's been so many changes over the years, and great job answering that question, because I think you hit on a lot of major topics that you and I have talked about in the past. But has the roster size changed since you've taken over?
Yes, and back to that last question, it's had to. When I got here, we were in the 120 to 125 range, and now we're up in the 135 to 140 range, and even that way it's gotten dicey on some Saturdays. Now we're going on 2 years in a row with only three wide receivers on one of the teams on game day, which isn't a good place to be. 2 years ago on the American squad, we had one off-the-ball linebacker, which is a really bad place to be. We had a poor kid from FAMU who was really a pass rusher, a really good pass rusher, had to play off the ball for the first at linebacker for the first time in his life in the Senior Bowl against a bunch of first-round offensive linemen that were trying to get their hands on him. So, yes, we've had to increase the roster size. It obviously, affects the bottom line of the Senior Bowl. We thank God we've got some more sponsorships on board to help fund this thing over the years. But we've had to increase the roster.
Jim, I think what you've done at the Senior Bowl since you've been there has done a really good job of finding these smaller school guys. Matter of fact, I get calls from my own scouts October, November. Hey, have you talked to Jim about some of the small school guys that the Senior Bowl has – found, and have you talked to Jim? He's who's he inviting from the small school? So kudos to you and your staff for always identifying those guys. And can you talk about a little bit, for the listeners, just some, what's your mindset going into Senior Bowl and the small school players?
Yeah, see, the small school guys have been a big part of the Senior Bowl forever. As you know, Jeff, that's one of the great things about the Senior Bowl is you get some of these guys from the smaller school level that get to come up here and prove themselves. And it's great for you guys, again, for the teams. And that's all we care about. We care about the job you have to do in April in picking these players. So when you can bring an FCS level player, or a Division II player that, you can obviously see certain physical traits on tape and play style and instincts, but you're not seeing them go against great competition. That's really been a huge thing with this platform over the years. And again, that's the transfer portal is affecting that. We're seeing our small school numbers go down because if these guys are good, sub FBS players, their first couple of years in college, most of them are making the jump up and taking NIL money. So again, we're working hard. Our staff does a great job. As you pointed out, our staff, we have 11 former NFL scouts on our staff this year. They've done a great job. But again, identifying the small school guys goes back to relationships with the NFL, with the teams themselves. I mean, we've had a couple Division III players in the game over the last few years. Quinn Miners from Wisconsin Whitewater. We had a guy from St. John's, Ben Barch, a couple D3 guys. We would have never found those guys. We don't, we're not in the schools every day. We're at games every Saturday, but we certainly don't have the budget for our guys to be in beating the streets at Division III level. So we wouldn't have found those guys if it weren't for the relationships we have with the NFL guys. But again, that goes back to our staff and having good relationships with the teams. And when they're out at games on Saturdays, if they're at Tulane or LSU in your backyard, we tell all our guys, you know, connect with the NFL guys in the press box or down in the field and, you know, just ask them, are there any small school guys that we need to get on the area? And the NFL guys have been great with us that way.
And for those that are looking, obviously, because Mobile, the game's February 1st, but of course the practice is the week before the Super Bowl on February 9th. I mean, the whole Gulf South is going to be just, you know, the place to be for football. SeniorBowl.com is where you can go, right? Jim, as far as tickets and also just to kind of look and see the accepted invitees and where things are.
Yeah. SeniorBowl.com. It's nice. We can pretty much house everything there. We post the accepted invites almost literally in real time. I mean, we'll get an email notification that a player is accepted, and our social media staff does an unbelievable job of putting that stuff right up there. So I just heard a bell ring upstairs, which means we just got another acceptance that came in. We ring the bell every time we get a player. And everything's out there. So I would say this to the fans listening that are along the Gulf Coast. The practice week is great. You'll see all these NFL guys you see on TV on Sundays, you know, guys like Jeff and all the coaches from the Saints. I mean, they're all down here. The new stadium, there's a great vibe there at practice with the Jumbotron and music. Like, there's just more of a vibe than there's ever been. And then we do the Mardi Gras thing over here too, just like you guys do in New Orleans. So we'll do a players Mardi Gras parade on Friday night. We pair that we do a free concert. Downtown. Last year it was Counting Crows. The year before that it was Nelly. We're getting ready to announce that for this year. And then stay for the game on Saturday. So it's really like a cool, you know, 2 or 3 days over here in Mobile, short little trip over here. You know, for your listeners along the Gulf Coast, we'd love to have you.
Well, Jim, there's a potential that we may get kicked out of our own building the week of Super Bowl because they're using our facility. We've talked about staying in Mobile until Monday or Tuesday the following week. So we may get to partake in some of that fun Mardi Gras Mobile style.
I love that. I love that, man. Well, we got room at the house for you, Jeff. Maybe not for anybody else, but we got room for you.
Sounds good, Jim.
Jim, the only question I have left, and this will be the final year, really, of the COVID player extensions, and your Senior Bowl watch list was like 800-plus, but normally it's around 500 plus, of course, of the juniors and the specialists. Not a deep draft, but and not a really a lot of first round grade players, which might sound bad, but for the Senior Bowl, that might end up being a good thing, right? You might get players in that bunch because they're not all pinpointed out in that first round.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's why I feel like this should be our best roster. We've gotten some verbal commitments from some juniors right now that we feel really good about. And again, just the nature of the draft, I think it's deep. I think there's nice depth to this draft because of the extra COVID year guys, but there's a lot of uncertainty in the first round. You know, an average year, I would say most teams have somewhere in the mid teens on first round picks on their board, you know, a good year, maybe low 20s to mid 20s. And I've talked to some teams this year that are right around that, you know, 10, 8, 9, 10 number. So hopefully the agent community has heard that loud and clear from NFL teams as well. And because there's not a lot of guys locked into that, you know, top 10, top 15 range, which is where, you know, a lot of agents pull the guys out of the Senior Bowl. We'll have a commitment from them and the agent will hear from GMs and guys like Jeff that, you know, we've got this guy's going to be a locked top 10 pick and we might lose a guy. But so hopefully we got our fingers crossed, Mike. We're excited for this year's class. It might work out well for the Senior Bowl.
Best of luck. Appreciate your time on my behalf and look forward to I've been to Mobile many, many times for that game. I hope it's a great week for Reese's and the Senior Bowl.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. Good to see you, Jeff.
You too, Jim. Take care, pal.
And that's our show for tonight. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll look for you next week here for the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.